humiliating losses. It wasn't enough that the inflation was degrading the government and running people into the ground. It wasn't enough that the government was scandalized by the Tsarina's and Rasputin's actions and all these other things. Lenin, in the summer of 1917, tried three times to seize power after all these terrible things that had happened in Russia, and he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it until finally the Russian army had disintegrated. It took all of those things to break in Lenin's favor for him to take over. And as I think you mentioned, Lenin's slogan was peace, land, and bread. He was claiming to be, he was the only one advocating that the Russians get out of the war for peace. But, of course, it turned out the reason Lenin wanted peace, it wasn't he was a man of peace. He wanted peace in the sense of stop fighting the Germans so that the Russian government, when he takes over, could concentrate on fighting other Russians. In other words, establish totalitarian control of the entire country. That's what he wanted peace with the Germans for, so he could start another war, and of course he did. That was the Russian Civil War, in which another 5 million people were killed.
Well, now, what part did Colonel Edward Mandel House play in this whole incredible scenario? Because many people think that House was the man behind Woodrow Wilson.
Well, House was a strange... He was an unofficial advisor, emissary, presidential representative. Like Wilson, he was an Anglophile. He agreed to support the British in any way. The British foreign policy had been guided by Edward Grey, who had, for a number of years, worked out a secret alliance with France. And the thing about a secret alliance is that it has no deterrent value on any potential adversaries, because they didn't know about it. The Germans didn't know that if France got dragged into the First World War, that Britain might come in. And Winston Churchill, in one of his memoirs, World War One memoir, said that if that alliance had become known, the British would have opposed it. That's why it was kept secret. Only a very few members of Parliament, three or four or five members of Parliament, heads of the most important parliamentary committees, knew about this secret alliance.
And so, as with so many things, you always want to keep the people in the dark. The leaders have one agenda, and of course the people have another. The people never really know what the government's doing until it's sometimes too late. We're going to be back in just a moment here with our special guest, Mr. Jim Powell, talking about Wilson's War.
A very important book is called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread of this horrible plague, both in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working with an organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background to this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Roseto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules, preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinix for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest is Mr. Jim Powell, and we're talking about his book, Wilson's War, and it's a fascinating analysis of the tragic history of that time. You have a chapter entitled, How Did Hitler Exploit Wilson's Blunder to Recruit 50,000 Nazis? What's the background to that?
Well, the French and the British won a decisive victory in World War One because the United States came in and made the difference, enabled them to break the stalemate. Excuse me, that put the French in a position where they could dictate the terms, and they imposed the ruinous reparations on Germany. And the result was an obvious incentive for the Germans to pay off the French with inflated marks. They just turned on the printing presses full speed, and the inflation was so bad that you had, excuse me, wives going to factories to get their husband's pay, which was in bundles of worthless marks, which they would have to wheel away in wheelbarrows, and they would as quickly as possible, spend that money to buy pots and pans or canned goods or anything tangible that might be likely to hold its value. The prices were going up 50% a day during the last months of 1923, and people were desperate to do anything to try to salvage some of their pay so that they could survive tomorrow. And this was devastating everybody. There were all kinds of stories of people who had adequate pensions before the war, and after the war, all they could get with their pension was a box of matches. Lots of stories like that. When shopkeepers would sell all their goods, and before they could spend the money to buy new goods, the prices had gone up, and so their shelves were half empty. And this was the kind of thing. It was totally destroyed the economy and affected far more people than the soldiers who were on the battlefield. You basically wiped out the middle class, and these people Hitler appealed to as starving billionaires. They had lots of paper, they couldn't buy anything with it, and they were desperate to do anything to get the this Versailles settlement off their backs. They played right into Hitler's hands.
And you know, of course, you look at that and you say, hey, but what's happening? That could never happen in America. And yet, of course, we see, well, the government says there's no inflation, but you're either going to believe what they see or your lying eyes and just look at the gas pumps and the price of food and the price of so many things that are really going up and going up dramatically. We haven't seen anything here. And the people who have all this money and pension funds, could it be wiped out here in America, do you think, by a similar inflation if we persist in our imperialistic wars?
Well, wars are the most volatile, unpredictable, dangerous, and expensive of all human events. And often what has happened is that countries stumble and pursue policies that backfire and have unintended consequences. And within a seemingly short time, what was a stable and prosperous situation deteriorates very rapidly.
Well, now, why did Woodrow Wilson assume that the Allies wouldn't demand a vindictive surrender terms from Germany? I mean, after all, he should have had an idea, something about human temperament. He led America into the war with all these wonderful ideas, the 14 points, peace without victory, all these wonderful slogans. But they were all slogans. That's how they sold the American people, you know, on the war. That's how they sold these ideas of our men going over to fight in the war to end all wars, the war to make the world safe for democracy. Peace without victory, that's what he talked about. But what really happened?
Well, you're raising a lot of interesting questions. This is one of the paradoxes that makes World War One not only the most important event of the last 100 years because of the consequences it had, but one of the most paradoxical. Here you have Woodrow Wilson, who was perhaps the best educated man ever to occupy the White House. He had a PhD. He was a former president of Princeton University, former governor of New Jersey, and yet by the evidence of what he did, he was also one of the most superficial and dangerous thinkers we've ever had who held presidential power. I'm not aware of any evidence that he gave any of the consequences you mentioned any thought, that if one side had won a decisive victory after having lost millions of men, and in the case of France, most of the fighting was in French soil. It was French farmland that had been destroyed by the artillery and
Hold that thought. We're going to have to go to a break here, and we'll be right back with Mr. Powell talking about Wilson's war.
Really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaur's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaur's book, Ode to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaur.
Have you purchased or invested in gold and silver coins or bullion in the last several years? If so, you've most likely been taken advantage of. In a lot of cases, out and out lied to. There are several tricks of the trade in play in the precious metals and collector coin markets. This is especially true during a hot market. Although it doesn't take a savvy investor to avoid the pitfalls of unscrupulous coin and metals dealers, it does take some common sense and the knowledge of which questions to ask. The asset management professionals at Colonial Resources can arm you with a few simple questions to ask your current broker or coin dealer. To find out if you've been taken advantage of, or if you're thinking of investing, call Colonial Resources toll-free, 1-800-685-4042. The precious metals and collector coin markets are hot and definitely where the smart money is heading. But before you make a mistake that could cost you hundreds or even thousands of dollars, call the professionals at Colonial Resources. The call and the advice are free. 1-800-685-4042. That's 800-685-4042.
Have you ever wondered whether you're really getting the truth from the media? Have you ever thought somebody's controlling your reality? Well, there's going to be a meeting. It's going to be held at the Westin Hotel over by Great America. It's going to be on May 28th and 29th, and it's going to be at the Conspiracy Conference. Now, if you'd like to know more about the Conspiracy Conference, call 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999. This is the fifth exciting year they've had this. Dick Gregory is going to be there, Nick Begich. There's going to be Daniel Hopsicker, Jack McLam. I'm going to have a booth, although I'll not be speaking. You're going to see the contrast between good and evil. The Conspiracy Conference is a great educational opportunity. We hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going May 28th, 29th. That's 209-832-0999. That's 209-832-0999.
Are you
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Tim Powell, his book, Wilson's War. And our telephone number, if you'd like to give us a call, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But I really think it's so vitally important that people understand this war. I went to Verdun. I'll never forget driving into the Valley of Verdun one morning, and the fog still hung over where the battlefields were, and the cannons were still there, and the surrounding area just covered with graveyards. 400,000 French soldiers fell at Verdun, and 400,000 Germans and Italians fell at Verdun. People have no grasp at all of the horror, or at least 400,000 Germans fell at Verdun. People have no understanding of the horror of what really took place there, or the horror of World War One, where 11.5 million soldiers perished. And awful. And I think about 125,000 of those were Americans, and an awful lot were permanently injured on top of that. Permanent casualties carrying the pain of their wounds to their death. And for what? What was accomplished? Mr. Powell, pick up the story.
Yes, nothing was accomplished except to perpetuate the bitterness and conflict that led to the rise of Hitler and contributed to the rise of Lenin, enabled him to successfully seize power in Russia. And we're seeing the same kinds of things, I think, going on in the Middle East with the Iraq War today. Many of you may not realize that Iraq as a nation did not exist until the settlement following World War One. It was actually Winston Churchill, who was the colonial secretary of Great Britain, who, because Britain was on the winning side, thanks to American intervention, was assigned the task of what was called a mandate to create this new nation. And he bolted together groups of people, the Shiites, the Sunnis, the Kurds, who didn't like each other. They didn't want to be in the same country together. But he forced them all into the same country, and he picked their king, a Hashemite, who supposedly went all the way back to Muhammad himself, a Sunni. And so it was the World War settlement, directed by Winston Churchill in this case, but it was determined by the settlement and the fact that we got into it, who started the Sunni rule of Iraq. And of course, the Sunnis, first the kings and then later the dictators, Saddam Hussein, were brutal in their treatment of the Shiites. So now we have this recent election where the majority of Shiites won and now control the government. And can there be any doubt that the Shiites are determined to avenge the 80 years of suffering at the hands of the Sunni minority. So we would appear to be in the early stages of a bitter civil war, which is beyond the capacity of anybody's soldiers, certainly ours, to fix, because these are deep-seated hatreds. There's religious animosity and other things going on, tribal hostilities, and we're going to we may very well likely see a theocracy, because the Shiites have said they want to establish a Islamic law as the rule of their government. So we may see an extension of Iranian-type anti-Americanism in the Middle East as a result of our well-intended intervention in a situation that didn't have much to do with American national security. In fact, has drawn soldiers and intelligence resources away from Afghanistan, where we had been pursuing Al-Qaeda following the attack on the World Trade Center.
Well, I share your concern. In fact, I look back on that episode where they created this new nation of Iraq. It was almost as if they were trying to create an unstable situation. Winston Churchill, whatever you may think of him, was certainly not stupid. He was one of the most brilliant, and I feel, in my own way of thinking, a very Machiavellian individual who created intentionally an unstable situation so you could never have the people really unite. And, of course, they were really under British control for some time, and then, of course, eventually, it was taken over, but they were dominated, really, by Western forces, and then, of course, now, once again, they're dominated by Western forces. I don't think the Iraqis have ever forgotten the British occupation, and they look upon the Americans in a similar way that they looked upon the British.
Well, I think that Churchill, like most of the people in Europe at that time, underestimated the ferocity, the explosive power of nationalism and the hatreds that were involved. He still thought, as a devoted servant of the British Empire, that they could patch it together and keep things going as they had been. So I don't think that Churchill really absorbed what had led to the First World War. First World War, as you know, started with the nationality conflicts in the Balkans. And these conflicts, well, they go back 500 years. The Serbs were fighting the Croats and other people back in the 1300s. But the nationality wars around 1911, 1912, there were several of them, are what led to the explosion into World War I. It was the assassination of the Archduke Francis Ferdinand, who was the heir to the throne of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the assassination of Ferdinand by the Serbian nationalists is what was expanded in ways that nobody anticipated. And so here we are today, essentially trying to maintain by armed force and by elections control and civility over explosive conflicts that are, I think, beyond our capacity to handle. In fact, what we're most likely to do is affect the outcome in ways that are quite likely to come back to haunt us.
And perhaps destabilizing the whole of the Middle East, as you alluded to earlier.
That's exactly right.
All right, fine. Of course, you make a point in your book. How did Woodrow Wilson make possible Stalin's terror and reign of terror? What was the relationship between Woodrow Wilson and Stalin and really the horrible brutality, and as you point out in your book, the communists, which came to power as a result of the First World War, had killed, according to Professor Rummel, about 60 million people. When you talk about 60 million people, that's a statistic. It's incapable of the average individual understanding the murder of 60 million people, and yet that's what is attributed to the communist Lenin and his follower, Joseph Stalin. So what part did we play in bringing this whole thing about, or at least facilitating it coming about?
Well, Stalin would not have come into power unless Lenin had come into power first. And Lenin would not have come to power if Russia had gotten out of the war.
And, of course, we were doing everything. We were actually bribing Kerensky in 1917 to stay in the war.
That's right. We paid, Wilson ordered that the Russian provisional government be paid the modern equivalent of about $4 billion. Now, that was not a lot of money compared to what had already been spent on the war, but the Russian provisional government was broke. They, as I mentioned earlier, they didn't have enough money to buy guns for all the soldiers that they were sending to the front. So even though it was a modest amount of money, it made a difference. That and the diplomatic pressure to stay in the war. If after the collapse of the Tsar's regime in February, March of 1917, if after that revolution Russia had gotten out of the war, decided they had enough, it was going from bad to worse, Lenin would have come out of hiding and gotten off the train, arrived in back in Russia, because he had spent the war hiding out in Switzerland. If he had gotten off the train on his return to Russia and found that Russia had left the war and people were cheering in the streets and their soldiers were coming home back to their wives and their children, and the spending and the inflation were going to begin to improve, Lenin would never have been able to come into power. As I mentioned earlier, it took everything to break in his favor. All the horrors, the losses, the inflation, everything else, that he couldn't come into power until finally the Russian army collapsed, because the government had stayed in the war until the army could survive no longer.
And
so if Lenin had stayed out of the if Russia got out of the war, we wouldn't have had Lenin, we wouldn't have had Stalin, and all those terrors certainly would not have happened the way they did.
And of course, Woodrow Wilson was the architect. And, you know, but this is the thing about wars. You never know what's going to happen. Everybody thinks we're going to win and everything's fine and everybody's out the streets cheering as the troops go off, marching off to die. But they don't understand the history of wars, and they don't understand that wars time and time again have bankrupt nations financially and morally, and led to the destruction of freedom.
Well, you're absolutely right. World War II is commonly described as the good war, the just war, and I'm certainly I'm obviously glad that Hitler was defeated. He was among the most evil men, but our ally was Stalin, who was an even bigger mass murderer, so that we can make a pragmatic statement that World War II did a good thing, but you can't describe a war as a good war when we are siding, allying with a mass murderer on the scale of Stalin, as you mentioned, murdered 60 million of his own people. And within 5 years after World War II was over, there were more people living under totalitarian regimes than was the case before World War II. This is because communism had come to power in Eastern Europe and in China.
All right, well, let's go to Roger, who's calling us from Pennsylvania. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you'd like to give us a call. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. That's 831-464-8295. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, if you please, gentlemen, and I expect to probably read this back for application to the Wilson era as well, but contemporarily, since you went there, would it not have been better for American, and still would be, for American interest, regional interest, even Israeli interest, that the best thing would happen would Iraq would fracture into at least three separate and squabbling states? And then what do you make of like the posture of somebody like Pat Buchanan? I think it's curious, while I was against the war going in, but now that we're there, in for a penny, in for a pound, and how many more thousand American lives,
Well, I think that's a little out. We're really talking about Woodrow Wilson and Wilson's War, but we'll see what our guest would like. Do you want to comment on that at all?
Well, I agree with you that when you have when you have major factions that are at odds with each other, hate each other, what's the point of forcing them into a unitary state? You either need to have separate states or some kind of highly decentralized federation, such as the Swiss have, where the central government has very little power, specifically very little power to oppress other people, so that the Shiites can go their way, and the Sunnis can go their way, and the Kurds can do their thing, and they don't have to fight about it because there is not a powerful central government that's going to try to force one group's preferences on everybody else.
And of course the great tragedy is under the wicked Saddam Hussein the Christians lived and they prospered and of course they were there accepted because it was a secular society, and now that we brought freedom, why the Christians, most of them have fled the country. So you know, we've really done a wonderful thing to bring freedom and democracy out of that country, or have we? Well, what's the message you would like to leave with our listeners today? As you've analyzed Wilson's War, World War One, most people don't understand the background. They don't understand what happened. They don't understand the foolishness of our having gotten involved. And so, you know, when you wrote this book, you had a purpose. You had a message. What is that message?
I think we should defend America, protect America against terrorism. We should stay out of other people's wars. We should not try to build other people's nations. And I think we should be open to the world in terms of trade, immigration, and investment, because America became a great country by learning from everybody, by welcoming peaceful people and who have come here and helped to build our country. And to I think we have our hands full making this the best country it can be, and hopefully our success will continue to inspire other people to consider, if not completely embrace, a system of constitutional limitations on government power, religious freedom, civil liberties, and other things that are among our most precious legacy. They're very hard to develop. We can't force them on other people. But they can certainly see how we are able to make these things work here.
Well, of course, it seems to me, though, that in the process of the war on terrorism, we're abandoning so many of the fundamental ideas that made America great. We're abandoning limited federal government. We have a federal government that is spending more money than any other government in all recorded history. We have ever more power being given to the centralized government. We have something called the Patriot Act, which is being used to simply undo the various things, guarantees of freedom we have in the Bill of Rights in the name of fighting the terrorists, and yet we won't even seal our borders or do any of the logical things you would do if you were really worried about a war on terrorism. And I almost have a feeling that we're going to lose our freedom in the name of trying to protect our freedom.
You're absolutely right. It's during wartime that civil liberties go out the window. So we have to be very careful when the government is making patriotic appeals, because all of us will rise to defend our country if it's truly under threat, but it's these same patriotic appeals that are used to subvert liberty at home. And here we are, as you mentioned, with unprecedented levels of surveillance, with people being detained without being charged, which is a violation of one of the most fundamental civil liberties that we inherited from the British, of habeas corpus, and many, many other restrictions that we are dealing with that, as time goes by, seem to have very little effect on the terrorists, but are clearly losses of civil liberties, and we know historically...
We're going to have to let you go. We're out of time. God bless. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
The Anglo-American establishment It gives you the documentation for Professor Quigley's allegation that there was a secret society created in England that ultimately came to dominate England and ultimately came to dominate the United States of America. The Anglo-American Establishment will give you the books that you can read, written by men who are actually involved in the original secret society. Professor Quigley opens his book saying that most people have heard of the Rhodes Scholarships, and most people, a few people, have actually heard that Cecil Rhodes wrote a confession of faith, which was attached to his first five wills, talking about the formation of a secret society. But what almost no one in America realizes today is that that secret society was actually formed and still exists to this very day. The Anglo-American Establishment by Professor Quigley, Bill Clinton's mentor, is one of the most important books you'll ever read, and available by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Are you concerned about your child's future? Well, it starts with a sound education. VHM provides for that cornerstone of your child's future with a quality education founded on biblical principles. Our school sets high academic goals while developing moral standards. From preschool through eighth grade, your child is taught by experienced and credentialed teachers in all subjects, including our dynamic music program and state-of-the-art computer classes. Proverbs 22:6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." For over 50 years, VHM Christian School has provided peace of mind to parents knowing their children are receiving an excellent education in a loving environment. VHM is located at 427 Capitola Road Extension in Santa Cruz. Won't you call us today at 475-4762? That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762. Doesn't your child deserve a chance to try VHM?
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and people really need to understand the First World War, and they need to understand the Second World War, and most of what you think you know just is not true. We have a wonderful talk. It's called Iraq, the Untold Story. And it comes with a syllabus, which will give you the documentation for everything you we say, and if you want to see the documentation for the fact that the Japanese have been trying to surrender for 6 months before we dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and we wouldn't let them surrender. And when you understand the invasions of Iwo Jima and Okinawa were totally unnecessary, but there were evil and wicked people who wanted as much blood and carnage as they possibly can as a justification for taking us into the League of Nations, the United Nations and the world government. And you'll see things written back in 1908 talking about forming the United Nations. This was all planned. Everything has been planned to bring about the one world government. Perpetual war to bring about perpetual peace is what it's about. And then, of course, the documentation by the people who planned this war. And people like John Bolton and Paul Wolfowitz and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Liddy, who is, of course, Dick Cheney's chief of staff. They all come from a little group called the Project for the New American Century. We've simply taken their things off their website, and you can actually read where they talk about how we're not going to be able to implement our policies unless we have a catastrophic and catalyzing event like another Pearl Harbor, like a new Pearl Harbor. Those are their words, not mine. A catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. And how excited they are at the prospect that one day, or right now, we have the ability to create race-specific diseases from biological warfare against specific races. This is the mentality that people are up against. You need to get their information, and it's all contained in the syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story, and you'll actually should get that and get the video as well to get the two of them together. You had to get a decreased price, but you'll get an education in the background of the First World War and the Boer War and the Spanish-American War and the Second World War and Korea, the real reason for Korea and the real reason for Vietnam, which had nothing whatsoever to do with defeating communism, because we financed communism from its very inception, and we're financing it today in communist China. Why do you think we're transferring the military technology there and guaranteeing now $5 billion in loans so they can build their nuclear power plants? Why are we doing that? And encouraging our plants to go over to China because they get special tax rates and tax breaks and incentives and guarantees that if the factories are ever seized, why, they'll be compensated not what it cost them, but two or three times that. You see, we're creating the best enemies money could buy. You need to get my video, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. You need to get the book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy. It's a book written by Professor Sutton going into how the United States financed the North Vietnamese all during the Vietnam War. It was our technology, it was our money given to Russia that purchased the planes and the anti-aircraft missiles that were used to shoot down our planes. That Professor Sutton's interview, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, Professor Sutton's book, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, video, Iraq, the Untold Story, the syllabus, Iraq, the Untold Story. Understand the past, because as George Santayana said, those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it. It's only a matter of time now before the draft comes. They're already beginning to offer youngsters 13, 14, 15 years of age a bonus if they'll sign up to go in the military when they get to be 18, and they're going to be used as cannon fodder by people who look upon them as Henry Kissinger does, and quoted in the book The Final Days by Woodward and Bernstein, I believe, page 194, something like that, where he talks about them as stupid, dumb animals. Pray for America. Pray for Radio Liberty.